April 19th, 2011, Gerwick.net. Special podcast tonight, the State of the Union for TNA, TNA Wrestling. We're going to get into kind of some bullet points up front, kind of give you an overview of what we're going to do here in this podcast. TNA pay-per-view was Sunday night, lockdown in Cincinnati. Adam Fairfax was there, and we'll get into that very shortly. We'll also touch upon TNA's rebranding, the possibilities of TNA either changing names or discontinuing using the name TNA in their name. We'll talk about the creative department and then also touch upon talent, interesting issues going on with Kurt Angle and the Hardy Boys and Sting as the world champion. But first we're going to start up right off the bat up front. Adam Fairfax, our own Adam Fairfax, was in Cincinnati on Sunday and can give us a bird's eye report on lockdown. So I guess, Adam, right off the top, talk about your experience and what did you think of the pay-per-view overall?
Well, first of all, Steve, I'd like to thank you again for having me on the podcast here. And I was in Cincinnati at the U.S. Bank Arena. This would be the second TNA pay-per-view that I've attended live. I was at Slammiversary in your neck of the woods up there in Michigan at the Palace a few years back. And this is my second TNA pay-per-view. I've seen a few house shows actually in Cincinnati. They ran a smaller, older building, the Cincinnati Gardens. But for lockdown, which has traditionally been TNA's really second biggest pay-per-view of the year, they went to the U.S. Bank Arena, the much larger U.S. Bank Arena. I believe it holds around 16,000. WCW used to run there. They did the old sold-out pay-per-views from the U.S. Bank Arena. And, you know, to be honest, I want to be positive and as positive as I can because it was a good time. We did have a good time out, but there were a lot of things that were very upsetting. Decent crowd turned out in the beginning. We got there a little bit early and got to, you know, stand in line with some fellow fans, and everybody was pretty excited. The vibe for the show was pretty good. Don West came out earlier and was pitching his brown bag specials. You got a Jeff Hardy T-shirt, which was the only way that you could buy a Jeff Hardy T-shirt was if you bought the brown bag special. They didn't have any at the merchandise stands. There was no Jeff Hardy merchandise whatsoever. And you could buy the brown bag special, and you got four DVDs and, the Jeff Hardy shirt as well. I didn't end up picking one of those up. I didn't see a need for a Jeff Hardy T-shirt, but Don West was out and mingling with the crowd, which was a nice touch. TNA always, you know, for the most part, the promotion has been very accessible to the fans and all of my experiences with the show. But Don West was out selling the merchandise. He had on a Rob Van Dam T-shirt, and I looked closely. It wasn't the RDV shirt. It was the RVD shirt. You know, thought about ribbing Don a little bit about that, but they finally opened the doors and let us in, and they had, of course, you know, all the cage already set up. They had the same entrance set up that they used for Bound for Glory in Daytona last year, and as people started to trickle in, I noticed right off the bat that they started to take away chairs from the floor seating. There were about, I don't know, five or six empty rows of chairs on the floor, which I think the floor seats were going for like $1.60, $158. And right off the bat, that seemed like it was a bad sign. They took away about five rows of chairs, and the arena started to fill up. We were about the halfway point in the lower bowl, and, you know, to the left side of the arena's filling up. It's looking pretty good. Even the upper part of the bowl is pretty full, but right in that middle point, right where the hard side where the hard camera is, the entire lower bowl was empty. The entire upper bowl was empty. So basically you've got all these guys coming out on camera, playing to the camera, playing to the hard side, and there's no audience there. There were about four rows of floor seating, and of course that was full, but that was it. They're playing basically to an empty house, and they've got all these fans behind them. So I don't understand why TNA had the arena set up that way. Like I said, I've been to Slammiversary at the Palace of Auburn Hills, and at that show, they had the entire upper deck blacked out. No one was up there, but they had the entire lower bowl full, and it looked pretty good. I don't understand why they didn't do that. Again, of course, I don't understand why they choose to run these 16 to 20,000 seat arenas to begin with. You know, any time that we've seen them run in the smaller buildings, like when they did Impact on the road just a few weeks ago, they were in a smaller building and it sold out. It looked great. They did the same thing when they were in Detroit the first time for the first Bound for Glory on the road. They were in a smaller arena. They had about 3,000 people. It was packed to the rafters and it looked great. So right off the bat, just a negative in my, you know, from my perspective, that only half the arena is full, and it's completely obvious because you've got us all packed into one side of the arena. But Jeremy Borash and SoCal Val came out. Jeremy Borash, not such a great pop. SoCal Val, on the other hand, very over with the crowd in Cincinnati. They did the introductions for Don West and Taz, and they both got pretty decent reactions, and we had the pre-show with all the hype and all the let's order TNA lockdown, and then we saw a dark match with D-Von and Estia, with D-Von going over. Nothing really special about this match. D-Von got a decent reaction. Anarchia, I didn't necessarily hear crickets, but not so much. Not such a big reaction. And it wasn't a great match, but it wasn't a horrible match. Didn't really mean anything, nothing really special, just something to get the live crowd hyped. Usually they would throw out maybe an X Division match or something like that, something maybe a little, you know, fast-paced to get the crowd into things. I think that might have been a wiser decision, but it was what it was, and the crowd was hot. There were a lot of kids in the audience, so they were just excited for the show to get going. And then the pay-per-view kicked off.
Yeah, a couple of anecdotes here to throw in or tidbits to note. We did have a picture up. Someone sent us a picture. Actually, Michael Hearn, I want to thank him. He was sending us pictures throughout the night, and we ended up posting a number of his pictures that he shared with us. And when I saw the hard camera side pretty much empty, I knew the talk of breaking a record for TNA attendance was pretty much out the window. We learned today the crowd was between 3,500 and 4,000 paid. There probably was a little bit more than that, considering that they did give away some comps. I was asking people that went, did you see anybody like outside the arena giving away tickets or comping people? And they said, really, no. So what you had that particular day were the day, you know, where people go into the show that had already bought their tickets or were buying the tickets the day of the show to go, the walk-up crowd. And then as well, and I want to note, I did not see the show. I did not order the pay-per-view. Definitely have heard a lot about it. I've had a lot of people send me reports on it. I was actually exchanging text messages and instant messages throughout the night, with Adam and a couple other people that were actually in the arena that night. So I definitely had a lot of, even though I wasn't actually there, I had a pretty good feel of what was going on. So for the most part, I'm going to let Adam talk about the matches and maybe throw in a couple comments here and there. But I don't know, Adam, only in TNA can you get a pre-show dark match in a cage.
We
started the show. It was a Escape the Cage match for X Division. Jeremy Buck versus Robbie E versus Chris Sabin versus Brian Kendrick versus Max Buck versus Suicide versus Lethal versus Amazing Red. And as they do a lot of times, Adam, they opened up the show with an X Division match.
They did. And, you know, the confusing thing, for those of us in the arena, we knew that the pay-per-view was about to kick off as they had been counting it down during the pre-show, but absolutely no pyro, no fireworks, no big intro, welcome to lockdown. D-Von and Anarch finished their match, and Jeremy Borash, you know, vanished, went into the back, and all of a sudden, here comes the the guys for the opening X Division match. So there was really no, I mean, there was absolutely no pyro throughout the entire night, but no real clear indication that the pay-per-view had kicked off except for the introductions for the guys in the opening X Division match. And they all got pretty decent reactions. A few more than others. Amazing Red got a really decent pop, which is good for him. Amazing Red, you know, he's been with the company for so long. So Chris Sabin, decent pop as well, and Suicide as well. And, you know, the match got started, and it was pretty much guys going one-on-one, spot after spot after spot. You know, usually these cage matches, there's a lot more high-flying. There's a lot more action with the cage. To be honest with you, for the first really four or five matches, the cage didn't really play a part at all. As we'll get into it, we didn't really see any blood throughout the evening until later into the main events. But this match really, it was kind of a letdown, and it just made me realize how much the X Division has kind of fallen off a little bit. I can remember seeing these same guys work in the opening King of the Mountain match at Slammiversary just a few years ago, and how much more over they were. And even the more popular guys, like I say, like Chris Sabin and whatnot, it was a match that didn't really matter. It was something that was thrown together pretty much the last minute just to give guys a spot on the pay-per-view, which I'm for. I think everyone should have a spot on the pay-per-view, but it just didn't really mean a whole lot. It was spots that, of course, got eliminated right away. I'm pretty sure that it was Christopher Daniels. It looked like Christopher Daniels, and I haven't heard anything about anyone else playing the character of Suicide, but it just seemed like one quick elimination after the other was so kind of surprised. I thought that they would get to match some time, you know, maybe 20 minutes. I don't think that it went 10 minutes. I think that it was around the 8-minute mark that Jeremy Buck, I believe, is the winner there. Jeremy Buck or Max Buck, I can't tell the difference between the two of them. They're supposed to be broken up and not a tag team anymore, but they came out to the exact same music, one after the other. I'm not 100% sure what's going on with those guys, but to me, this was really an opportunity to kick off the show in a great, exciting way. You've got all this great talent in the ring, Jay Lethal, and just to be honest, it just kind of fell flat. It seemed like it was just one spot after the next. It just seemed so just planned out, and it didn't really get over with the crowd the way that an X Division match or an escape match is supposed to. So kind of disappointing right off the bat, just kind of left you, wanting more. And I don't know. I was disappointed, certainly.
Yeah, I think it was eight guys in this match, and very few of them are what you would call mainstay guys that the average TNA fan would know and be emotionally attached to. So I think that's why that one's kind of TNA does this a lot, you know, getting multiple people in matches. I never really liked, three and four and five-way, six-way matches. They do that a lot in TNA. And I said, there's a lot of these guys that are not over. And so, like you said, you don't even know if it was Max Buck or Jeremy Buck that won the match. And I'm looking through my notes here. It was Max Buck that won the opener. TNA does that oftentimes to get as many people on the show, as you said, get as many people on the show as they could. So at least they can get the paycheck for the night, get to the pay window, as Dusty Rhodes might say back in the day. Next up, we had a four-way tag match. So, again, you had eight guys in the first match, and you had eight guys in the second match. You had the British Invasion versus Inc. versus Orlando Jordan and Eric Young and Scott Steiner and Crimson. Now, the thing I heard, had about three or four people immediately text me, instant message me, that Scott Steiner, when he came out, got a huge reaction, and I think overall got one of the better reactions of the night.
Yeah, he did. And we of course, first got to see the pre-match promo with Scott Steiner and Crimson in the back. I've seen Crimson work on some indie shows, so I'm a little bit familiar with him. And, you know, I was definitely impressed by his physique. You know, the guy's a huge guy. And to pair him with Scott Steiner, I think it makes a decent pairing. Scott Steiner got a huge reaction. I think he's definitely over in the Cincinnati area. I saw Scott Steiner wrestle at the NWA show at the Ohio State Fair last August, I believe. And I couldn't believe there was probably only about 500 or 600 people there, but I couldn't believe that the reaction that Scott Steiner got that night. And I actually got to talk to him a little bit, and I got to say that I honestly think Scott Steiner is one of the best heels of all time, because he truly makes you believe that he is crazy. There's a lot of guys that people have said are crazy, and then there's a few that you truly believe it about. And for the longest time, I have honestly, truthfully thought Scott Steiner was a few screws short. And I can say he really is a super nice guy, and is a complete 180 from what his character is in the ring. But he did get a pretty decent reaction. The British Invasion, of course, came out to the chant of USA, which is pretty standard. Ink, Ink, not the greatest reaction, but they were over with the kids. And then, of course, Eric Young and Orlando Jordan. And Eric Young, surprisingly, got a pretty good reaction, too, which makes me happy, because poor Eric, you know, he's been with the company for so long, and they've just, you know, he's done the goofy, dim-witted character for so long. And at first it was pretty funny, but it's kind of run its course. And Orlando Jordan, I'm really not sure what he's doing there. I think they need to take whatever money they're spending on paying him and give it to MVP and have him come into the company. But the match itself, again, eight guys, so much going on. But really, then again, at the same time, not much going on. It was a pretty slow-paced match. It didn't really mean anything. We weren't really emotionally invested in this. It was another match they pretty much threw together, and I believe it was for the number one contendership for the tag team titles. And then, of course, towards the end of the match, you've got Eric Young, who starts to climb the cage to escape and make it out to the floor. But then, of course, It was contested by pinfall, so it didn't matter if you escaped the cage or not, which is something that TNA hasn't really been very clear on, which there's some more continuity issues that we'll get into later on in the card with Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle. But Ink picks up the win here, and I don't think it really means a whole lot. I guess the crowd popped for him. Like I said, they're over with the kids, but we see them go over. I personally am a fan of Brutus Magnus, who's just simply being referred to as Magnus again, and Doug Williams. So I'd have liked to seen the newly reformed British Invasion go over in this one. I hope that they didn't put these guys back together just to use them in situations like this. I would love to see them back into a feud with Beer Money, but Ink gets the W on this one, so it looks like we're going to get to see Ink and Beer Money Incorporated again.
Yeah, we also should mention, too, there was actually a promo leading up to this match by Eric Bischoff, and there was actually a couple of segments that seemed like they were kind of last-minute additions to the production of the show, and that led me to believe that when they penciled everything out or went over the match, all the matches, and timed everything out, they needed some extra filler, because I think the main thing that was going to cause them some trouble was that Mickey James obviously couldn't wrestle because she was injured. I believe the Divas or the Knockouts match was only about a minute long, which was up next on the show. Madison Rayne defended her title against Mickey James, and I guess the word is that Mickey's a couple weeks away from actually wrestling, which I guess then you can explain, you know, giving the title to her. But the problem is tonight and Wednesday night, they're actually taping Impact for the next couple of weeks. So a bit odd, I would say, Adam, overall, to give the title to Mickey James on a night where really she couldn't, work a match really at all.
Well, yeah, we were, you know, amongst the crowd. And again, Eric Bischoff did come out, and my only reaction to that was it seemed like a pretty meaningless promo that he cut. It seemed like, you know, my comment was, is this Impact that we're watching? What is the point of this? And some of the comments that he made, I remember he said something about bad-mouthing Cincinnati and how he made more money than anyone in the crowd or something like that. It really kind of seemed like, you know, I mean, for the most part, if you watch Raw, it's in a different city every night. They don't play to the local crowd. That's kind of a house show thing to do. So I just, you know, what was the point of Bischoff coming out? I don't know. But in the crowd, you know, in line before the event, people were talking, and we really honestly thought it was going to be Tara coming out and taking the place of Mickie James. They did a pre-matched promo with Tara and Mickie James, and Mickie James just told Tara to keep her nose out of it, and she told her to stay in the back, stay in the locker room for the match. And actually, the introduction of Madison Rayne and Mickie James lasted longer than the match. Madison Rayne's new theme music is absolutely terrible, and we got to hear it over and over and over again. It felt like. And mix that with the fact that the U.S. Bank Arena only serves Miller Lite and Miller products. Just a bad combination, but. Mickie James, of course, then came out, and, yeah, this match was really quick. It definitely seemed like Mickie James was favoring her arm, elbow, shoulder, whatever it is. Her arm was definitely seemed that she was favoring that. And before you know it, it was over. And Mickie James is your new knockout champion. So I don't know how this is going to play out on television over the next couple of weeks. I don't know. Maybe they'll acknowledge the fact that Mickie James is injured, which is something that I think they could have done on Sunday night, and Tara would have been a more than suitable replacement. But maybe they'll acknowledge the fact that Mickie James is injured, and because of the fact that Madison Rayne lost the title and she told Tara to stay in the back, maybe we'll get to see Madison Rayne and Tara, you know, feud or go at it over the next several weeks while Mickie James rests up and you know, gets healthy. So, I don't know, kind of a throwaway match to have. I know that the Divas Championship or the Knockouts Championship, excuse me, isn't as important, and it's not online with the TNA World title, but you just had a pay-per-view last month where your World Championship match went about 90 seconds, and the very next month, the Knockouts Championship match goes about the, you know, about the same. So just kind of a waste.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And of course we noted on the website that Mickie James has now won the both women's championships in WWE, the Divas title, and the women's championship, and now as well as the TNA Knockouts title. So for those that keep track of those titles, Mickie James holds kind of a first in terms of records for women's championships. Next up, we had Samoa Joe against the Pope, and we had a couple of occasions, Adam, I believe, where there was a full moon out in Cincinnati.
Yeah, we definitely got to see that. But you know what? To be honest with you, they played it, the spot, to the empty half of the arena. So I thank God for that, you know. But this match to me, I believe I texted it to you as well Sunday evening, but to me, I thought this match really had the opportunity to steal the show and what it would mean for these guys to go out there and be able to do that. They gave them about 11 minutes, and it just kind of seemed like they were walking through it, just going through the motions. This match, Samoa Joe, of course, you know, he had he's had such high highs within TNA, but he's also had some low lows. And D'Angelo De Niro, the Pope, has been out of that main event picture for the last several months as well. So, to me, this really was an opportunity for these guys to go out and just tear the roof off and really steal the show. And what we got was just a slow pace, just a boring match, really, which it's hard for me to say that a Samoa Joe match was boring, but just didn't stand out at all. And, you know, they did the comedy spot with the tights and the backside of the Pope, and, you know, just an opportunity for these two guys to go out and show why they are two of the better young talents in TNA. And they went out, and for the match that they had, it's just a reason and an excuse for them to stay where they are on the card. I don't see them, you know, stepping up anytime soon. This feud has been pretty much meaningless. There's really been no reason for us to get behind this as fans. They just threw these two guys together. I think that, you know, throughout the last few years, Samoa Joe and D'Angelo Rivera have been two of the most over characters in TNA, so it's a real shame to see them drop this far down the card and, you know, to suffer through this meaningless feud. But I guess they could be Desmond Wolfe, so it could be worse.
Yeah, I think they've really wasted Samoa Joe's talents. You remember the feud he had with Kurt Angle. I thought that's when they were getting the most out of him. And really since then, they've done a couple character shifts with him. And I just don't think they get the bang for their buck with Samoa Joe. I think he's definitely one of the more talented guys they have in the company. And you say, you know, younger guys, and all of a sudden you think, you know, AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels, and suddenly these guys are, you know, mid-30s, going on 40s. I believe AJ and Daniels are getting close to 40 now. So, you know, it's like the window of opportunity and some of the talents they have seem to be closing, which is unfortunate for TNA. Next up on the card, we had Hernandez against Matt Morgan.
Yeah, Hernandez and Matt Morgan, we get to see another backstage segment. This time with Mexican America, and I had a little guy sitting next to us. He was about 12 years old, and I talked to him, you know, periodically throughout the night. He said, "What do you think about Mexican America?" And I said, "I really miss LAX." Hernandez got a decent pop. Matt Morgan about the same. Matt Morgan is a physical specimen. He is something to behold. The guy is a monster, and to see him live, you know, sometimes when you see these guys on TV, you just forget how big they are. And Matt Morgan is a monster. And he's another guy who has been, you know, on the verge of that main event spot, at that top spot in TNA, but then for some reason can't seem to sink his teeth into it and stay there for very long. After the disappointing match between Samoa Joe and the Pope, I thought, oh, and again, this is something that I believe I texted you. I thought, okay, those were the two guys that I expected to steal the show, Samoa Joe and the Pope. Now, Matt Morgan and Hernandez, let's see what you guys can do. You know, this will be the perfect opportunity for someone to come out and really set this show on fire and steal the show. But again, it just seemed like more filler. When Hernandez and Matt Morgan were the tag team champions, and then we saw that split and Matt Morgan turn and put Hernandez out for a while. This feud had potential then. It was hot then. I cared then. But then Hernandez has been off TV for so long, and he comes back, and he's the leader of Mexican America. I think Hernandez is a great talent, and I think he's getting better on the mic. But I don't think that he's good enough on the mic or in the ring to be the leader of any kind of stable. So, you know, again, this match just seemed like it was filler. We've seen it. We've seen it on Impact. We've seen it on other pay-per-views. You know, you've got two guys with pretty much the same style. Matt Morgan looks great when you put him in the ring with a Sting or a Kurt Angle. But when you put him in the ring with a Hernandez, you know, not as much. And the same thing can be said about Hernandez. Hernandez looks great when he's working with great talent, when he's working with older, established talent. But when you put him in there with someone like Matt Morgan, who has a very similar style, it just fell flat. And again, it seemed kind of like filler. And it didn't do anything to further these guys or to, you know, help get them over with TNA's fan base. I don't think any new fans that would have seen this match would have thought, oh, man, you know, I want to see what TNA is all about. This, you know, sparks my interest or whatever. It just kind of fell flat. It was just filler. And by this point in time of the show, I just thought, you know, this has been a longer version of Impact. just everything had seemed to fall flat. But the crowd would, they'd come alive next.
Next up on the card, there was the, this is probably the point, Adam, when the show really started to pick up. And we were getting instant messages and text messages from people in the arena that said, you know, this was kind of a flat show to this point. And I know there were people that were commenting that were seeing the show or watching the show on pay-per-view, the television side, that thought it was kind of a flat crowd to that point, which is unusual because Cincinnati is, you know, typically a hotter crowd. And I think the next match was probably when the show really picked up. It was the Ultra Males rules match, best two out of threes. The first match was a submission match. The second match was a pinfalls rules match. And then, if necessary, it was escape rules. Jeff Jarrett with Karen Angle versus Kurt Angle.
Yeah, the crowd certainly started to come alive for this one. Of course, Jeff Jarrett was out first and received a pretty good reaction. For all the Jeff Jarrett haters out there, I got to say, I've said it for a long time, and I know that his role behind the scenes in TNA isn't what it once was, but Jeff Jarrett really is one of the hardest working guys in professional wrestling, and he's still a very effective heel because when he came out, you know, he got, you know, for the most part, the biggest negative reaction out of anyone, you know, throughout the rest of the night. So Jeff Jarrett definitely over and a very effective heel. Of course, then the opposite, Kurt Angle came out the pop of the night. He didn't rise to the stage at all. We were all, you know, looking to see that. Just came out like everyone else did, but certainly got a very huge reaction. And we get into the match, and, you know, these two guys, they started off kind of slow, but, they started to get into it. The first, I think that, you know, maybe in retrospect it was a good build, but it was a slow build. It started out slow, and probably part of that was the submission rules for the first fall. But, again, there's TNA with those continuity issues. You know, the referees making two counts in the first fall that – is submission only, so I don't know what happened had Angle or Jarrett not kicked out during that first fall, but they at no point in time during this match between falls did they ring the bell, so we weren't really sure in the crowd in the live audience, you know, necessarily. I wasn't aware that anyone had tapped out when you know, after the first fall, so. You know, the match wasn't too bad. We got Karen Angle down at the end. Kurt Angle did some crazy spots. He missed a few spots. We got to see the RKO, of course, and the crazy move of the night. And really the only time that the cage played that much of a role in the evening was definitely Kurt Angle's death-defying moonsault from the top of the cage. And the crowd was really shocked by that one. We got some TNA chants, and, you know, Kurt, for his, you know, numerous broken necks and, you know, God only knows what else, for him to do those kind of moves at this point in his career is just, it's, you know, I don't know that it's necessary, honestly. This was a bad show, but it was a bad show with Kurt Angle's moonsault from the top of the cage, so I can't say that it would have been much worse without that move, but Kurt Angle, of course, is a soldier. He is a trooper, and he, you know, pulled it off. I couldn't really tell from my vantage point, but I have read reports online that he pretty much missed Jarrett with the moonsault. I haven't seen the tape yet. I was trying to search YouTube earlier and see if it had made its rounds on the internet yet, but I haven't seen it yet, but from what I've heard, he did miss Jarrett. But Karen, Jarrett, I guess she is now, came out, and we saw Gunner down there at some point, too, which props to Gunner, of course, who was Phil Shatter on the indie scene, which is, you know, he is a true up-and-coming young talent who I think is going to do great things in TNA. But we saw him come out, and It was a pretty good match. The crowd was into it. Like I say, it was a slow start. It was a slow build, and it was a pretty surprising ending. I don't think the crowd thought it was going to go that way. I personally didn't think it was going to go that way, but really the first match of the night that you know, lived up to any of the hype, and, you know, the crowd started to come alive.
This is, I believe, the second time that Jeff Jarrett has defeated Kurt Angle on pay-per-view, and every time I see that, I can't imagine Jeff Jarrett beating Kurt Angle at anything, let alone a wrestling match. So, you know, kind of, you know, when you're the booker or you have creative input into the product, you can obviously book yourself to beat Kurt Angle. That said, next up was the TNA Championship match, Triple Threat. It was the semi-main event. You had the champion Sting defending the title against Rob Van Dam and Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, and I got to say, I was really surprised, and I think most everybody in the crowd was surprised, too, that this match wasn't going to be the main event. The match started out. We got the introductions there, and everyone, like I say, was pretty surprised. It's my understanding that Hulk Hogan's new wife and his children were at ringside, something that the live crowd wasn't really aware of. There was a point in time when a bleach blonde who was probably dressed stood out a little different than the rest of the majority of wrestling fans at ringside stood up and was taunting the crowd. And at the time, I didn't really quite realize who it was, but I'm guessing that it was probably either Hogan's new wife or his daughter. They look an awful lot alike, but hey, that's his bag, not mine. But this match, really kind of a slow start. They didn't get a whole lot of time. I think it went about 8 minutes, which was a theme throughout the night. These matches, not a whole lot of time to tell a story. Sting got a great pop. Mr. Anderson got a pretty decent reaction. RVD, pretty decent reaction as well. For Rob Van Dam to say that he's bigger than TNA, I'm not so sure about that. But he got a decent reaction. And then, of course, a surprise for those of us in the crowd. Up to this point, I thought for certain that Hulk Hogan wouldn't be in Cincinnati. But all of a sudden, we hear the Hulkster's music, and out he comes with a steel pipe in hand. And pretty crazy to see Hulk Hogan come out, and the reaction that he got, it was pretty negative. Lots of boos for the Hulkster. And, of course, you know, we get the pipe passed in and, you know, Mr. Anderson and Rob Van Dam arguing over who it was intended for. And, of course, Sting gets the Scorpion Death Drop on Mr. Anderson for the 1-2-3. And we get the stare down between Sting and Hulk Hogan, which I think obviously we're probably building up to Hogan's return, which it looks like it's going to be, you know, against Sting. So I'm sure that they're probably building towards Bound for Glory. So in the Bound for Glory main event, we're going to get to see, you know, the combined age is about 110 there, I think. So I don't know, man.
It's circa 1997 all over again.
It is. It is. And it's a shame because Sting is, you know, I mean, he is, we were talking offline, what do we say, 52, 53 years old.
Yeah,
you know, he can still, if you put him in the right situations, he's still very over. You know, I was surprised to say, like I said, the little guy sitting next to me, he said Sting was probably his favorite TNA wrestler. He said John Cena was his favorite WWE wrestler, so I don't know how much we can trust his opinion, but... You know, Sting's still certainly over, and even with the younger crowd, he's over. So he's still, you know, he's got it enough in the ring that he can still deliver when need be and really, you know, can still put on a decent match. But I don't know what he's going to be able to do with Hogan. Hulk Hogan should probably, I don't know if he should be walking without assistance right now, but we're probably going to get to see him back in the ring, brother, and he's probably going to be the new TNA World Champion.
Oh, boy. Okay. I'm already geeked for that, I can tell you. The main event was the Lethal Lockdown, kind of the shades of the War Games, which is probably another WCW flavor to the show. We had the Immortal, which is Bully Ray, Matt Hardy, Abyss, and Ric Flair against Fortune, which are the tag team champions of Beer Money, the X Division champion Kazarian, and Christopher Daniels. And I believe you noted it earlier, Christopher Daniels, of course, was in the opening match as Suicide. They took him out relatively early to save him up for the main event, and then, of course, Christopher Daniels competed in this match as well. And the Lethal Lockdown was the main event of Lockdown.
Yeah, it was the main event of Lockdown, and Immortal, of course, they were out first, and really just a ragtag kind of thrown together group. You know, you've got Bully Ray, Bubba Ray Dudley, and Matt Hardy, and Ric Flair and Abyss. I certainly am an Abyss fan. He's the hometown boy here in Cincinnati, and you know, just a ragtag group. I think Ric Flair is, I mean, he's, you know, you talk about the old guys, Ric Flair is definitely up there, and I hate to say anything bad about Ric Flair ever, as, you know, Ric Flair, in my opinion, is the greatest of all time, and, you know, I'm probably just as big a Ric Flair mark as anyone out there, but, you know, at this point in his career, he wrestled in slacks, and, what looked between a cross between a woman's undershirt and a wife beater. And then, you know, like I say, Bully Ray, Abyss, and Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy is just as crazy and out there as his brother, and I don't mean that in a good way, you know, as far as their extreme in-ring style is concerned. Matt Hardy is, you know, I don't know, supposedly he broke his arm during this match. But Immortal's out first, and they got a pretty decent heel reaction. And then, of course, Fortune comes out, Beer Money, Kazarian, and Christopher Daniels, they got a good reaction as well. We got a pre-match promo from Fortune, and pretty decent match to start things off. Of course, they have the War Games format where two guys start things out, and then it's two-on-one, and then two-on-two, and so on and so forth. And then the cage lowers. And it's funny because the lid of the cage is supposed to lower once all eight men are in the ring, but it didn't happen that way. The cage didn't lower until all four members of Immortal were flat on their backs. And we got the Beer Money chant from not only Beer Money, but also Kazarian and Christopher Daniels. And then the dreaded cage lowered, the roof of the cage, which had baseball bats and 2x4s and crutches and trash cans and trash can lids and all that good stuff. And it lowered. And one thing that we noticed, one, was there was no Brian Kendrick hiding out on the roof of the cage. And two, usually for every other Lethal Lockdown match that we've seen, there are vents, I guess you could call them, little openings in the roof where you know that one way or another there's going to be a spot on top of the cage. This time we didn't have that, so, you know, we only assumed that that wasn't going to happen. There was no table set up on the top of the cage. But then eventually, of course, we did see Matt Hardy make his way outside, and then Christopher Daniels follow him out, and they tussled around on top of the cage, and we saw Matt Hardy almost throw Christopher Daniels off the top of the cage, and then he hit Chris Daniels with a twist of fate and climbed down the side. And Abyss had made it out of the ring at that point in time as well, and Chris Daniels was down and out for a while, and then all of a sudden we saw the big dive from the top of the cage, which was certainly over with the crowd. Got a very good pop. And then all of a sudden the music hit and AJ Styles made his return and came out and just took Bully Ray apart. And then we saw the deconstruction of Immortal, if you will, and Fortune goes over to a pretty decent pop from the crowd, and that ends the show.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too. Adam Martin was, of course, doing the commentary from WrestleView for Gerwick.net. He always does a great job covering the individual pay-per-views we do, TNA and WWE. And throughout the night, we were getting very little reaction. You know, the comment boxes at the end of each post, fans could leave us individual messages. It was very lackluster in terms of volume overall. We were getting, you know, a good amount of traffic to the site, but there wasn't a lot of comments being left. And even as we do this recap of the pay-per-view, on the main results page that Adam posted after the show that has all the matches listed as one continuous report, including Adam himself putting a comment on there, there was 9 responses altogether, which is not good. I mean, typically WWE will do 3 or 4 times that number, and obviously through the night we'll get all kinds of comments on the individual match results. So it was definitely a night where, yeah, there was some interest. The people that maybe didn't order the show maybe was curious to see what was on it, but not a lot of commentary from the readers, which is a little unusual. Because even if you don't see the show, you know, there's always people that want to give a comment about the show overall or maybe talk about the creative direction they're going, which really will tie into our next topic, TNA branding. And now that Lockdown is in the book, we're going, it looks like, Adam, possibly in a new direction with TNA overall. There's definitely talk that they may either drop the initials TNA, drop the name altogether. There's talk that they could do Pro Wrestling Impact as a new promotional name. There's also talk that they just may refer to themselves as Impact, since Impact is their main show. Personally, me speaking, I think TNA is a dead name. I've never been a real big fan of the name itself. If you're a wrestling promotion, I'd like to see wrestling in the name, such as an NWA, we saw, or WCW has, at least has wrestling in the name. And then, to me, Adam, as well, Impact is, if I'm going to kind of start over, I'm kind of hitting the restart button, I would try to rename the show. I think Impact is a name that when people talk about has kind of a negative connotation. We've seen through the years where they rush through things. Remember when they were a one-hour show, they said, hey, if we got a two-hour show, it'd be a much slower-paced show and be a better show. I just think overall when people talk about TNA or they talk about Impact, I think both names have been kind of warped. And if I'm starting over, if it's my decision, I would kind of start over in a totally new direction altogether.
Well, you know, I agree. And, you know, one thing I do want to say, and it plays into this point as well, is that at the end of Lockdown, you know, we always have a tradition of going out and after the show and going around to the back of the building to where, you know, the wrestlers are leaving. And at the Slammiversary show that I had been to, like I said, in Detroit, all the wrestlers were super accessible after the show. I remember talking with a guy that you interviewed on here not too long ago, Dutch Mantel, and got a picture with Dutch, and Christopher Daniels and Kazarian and Velvet Sky and Don West, and so many of the TNA talents stuck around after the show. They were outside taking pictures, signing autographs. It was a really nice experience, and it's something that TNA has been known for. It's a company that I just don't understand how they can do some things so right and then do something so wrong. After Lockdown, we made it our way down to the back of the arena, and it is unfortunate the way that U.S. Bank Arena is set up. There's not a whole lot of space. There wasn't an opportunity necessarily for, you know, a crowd to gather, but there were probably roughly, I'd say, 15, 20 fans, some little kids, you know, ranging from, people my age, but, you know, trying to catch a glimpse of the wrestlers coming out, leaving, maybe sign an autograph, maybe snap a picture, at least acknowledge that the fans are there. How about a wave? But the security, which, I mean, that's their job, I understand, but the security of the U.S. Bank Arena shooed everyone across the street. There was nobody, absolutely nobody, causing any harm. There was, you know, there was nobody causing a scene. There was no one holding up traffic, but they shooed everyone a good 25, 30 feet away. And as these guys came out, just a completely different atmosphere than just a few short years ago in Detroit for Slammiversary. Not a town, especially Crimson, I will say about it. Aside from him, not one point even waved or acknowledged that the fans were there. They all just got in their cars and kind of drove off. And it really left a sour taste in my mouth, only because, you know, I've been to WWE shows and TNA shows where the wrestlers were a lot more accessible to the fans, and they just completely snubbed everyone that was there. I understand that you've got to get on, you got to get on the road. You've got planes to catch. You've got hotels to check into. And these guys are tired. You know, they traveled. Maybe, maybe they worked Saturday night somewhere and whatnot. But to me, it just left a negative taste in my mouth. And that's the thing about TNA that I just can't seem to understand, that they can present such a great product on the road for these non-televised house show events. You know, you very rarely get negative feedback about a TNA house show. But now, like you say, there weren't many comments at all for lockdown overall. They can't get feedback at all for their pay-per-views. But every time they have a house show, it's always positive feedback. They're very accessible to the fans. They stick around after the show and sign autographs and take pictures. Heck, you can get in the ring at a house show with a TNA talent with Kurt Angle or Samoa Joe or AJ Styles and get your picture taken with them. So for them to be able to do so much right, and then you turn on TV and you see Impact and you see the pay-per-views and you see the product they're offering, I think a complete name change or rebranding is completely 100% ideal. I think personally they need to just drop all their current storylines, all their current feuds, go with Impact Championship Wrestling or Pro Wrestling Impact or however, you know, you decide the initials to be. That's fine. The name doesn't really matter to me. But drop all the current storylines and just go out and present a good wrestling product and listen to the fans. See who's over. See whose segments are highest rated. And by segments, I don't mean backstage segments with motorcycles and all the nonsense that they give us so much, but just have wrestling matches and see what wrestlers are over simply by what they do in the ring, and then slowly start to build angles around these guys. It just doesn't make sense to me with all the focus on the old guys. TNA's got to do something, and if it's going to be a rebranding, if they need to completely shut down the company and relaunch as something new, if that's what it's going to take, then I hope that's what they do. But they could do that 100 times over. They could shut down every week, and Impact could have a new name every week. As long as the same people are still in charge and some major decisions aren't made and some major changes made behind the scenes, a name change, to me, really isn't going to matter.
Yeah, I mean, that you went right into my next bullet point here. We wanted to talk about creative and the power structure within TNA, and I think you nailed it right there. They can change the name of the show. They could change nights of the show would be on the air. They can change the titles, different names of the titles. They could change the name of TNA to NWA or whatever name. You said Pro Impact Wrestling or Impact, something with Impact in the name. But to me, the bottom line is if the top level management remains the same, which it appears that would be the case, that we'll still have Vince Russo, who's been in charge of the creative department for a long time. Kind of funny, I was thinking back to the dying days of WCW, and remember when they went out and made a pitch to get Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara away from WWE, that they were brought in to kind of save WCW, and obviously we see where WCW is today. And then, nowadays, and has been this way, I think he was there since 2002 or 2003, Vince Russo I'm talking about. They brought him in really almost right after they started up. That he's been, a guy who's been in charge for creative for a very long time. Jeff Jarrett's been on the booking staff. He was gone, and he came back, and he's back on the booking committee again. They have a guy named Matt Conway who's on the booking committee, who nobody knows because he's basically a fan that doesn't know a lot about wrestling, but yet is on the creative department because, from what I understand, that Vince Russo doesn't like people on the writing staff or the booking staff that knows a lot about wrestling or more about wrestling than what he already knows. So he likes to surround himself with guys that know less, and that's the reason that a guy like Matt Conway is on the booking committee. But to me, Adam, as long as Dixie Carter is the president, as long as Jeff Jarrett's on the writing staff and Jeff Jarrett books himself to beat Kurt Angle, not that that makes a huge amount of difference, but it just shows the power structure there that Jeff Jarrett beats Kurt Angle because he's on the booking staff and he's tight with Vince Russo. as long as Vince Russo is there and they continue to draw 1.1 and 1.2, that you can call it what you want. You know, somebody said to me one time, you can call it turd or rose, but at the end of the day, it's still a turd. And, you know, if they don't change the direction, if they don't change the decision-making process, in the end, it'll still be the same promotion.
Well, I agree 100%. Vince Russo has been there for, like you say, for quite a while. So it's pretty much the first day. And when he wasn't there, Ed Ferrara was. So it's pretty much, you know, he had a presence from the very beginning, from the very first pay-per-view. Since the beginning, TNA is a company that wasn't supposed to stick around. You know, they started out with the weekly pay-per-views. And I've got to say that I ordered the very first pay-per-view, and I've watched it pretty consistently ever since. And there are some things that Vince Russo has done that, you know, of course, throughout his entire career, you just shake your head and say, what the hell is going on here? You know, what is this? You know, and then there's some other things, you know, the highlight of the X Division, you know, there had been a different combination of different guys involved with creative, guys like Terry Taylor, guys like Dutch Mantel, guys like Jim Cornette, guys that I have a great amount of respect for what they've accomplished in the wrestling business. And I think that there's been just such inconsistencies with the booking team and the booking staff. It's been a constant of Vince Russo, and that's what drove Jerry Jarrett away from the company. I mean, Jerry Jarrett was a guy who had a proven track record being able to run a successful and profitable wrestling promotion all the way up to the dying days. I mean, you talk about the dying days of the territories. The territories had been dead and gone, you know, and Jerry Jarrett was still plugging away in Memphis, and he was still running a business that he wasn't losing money. You know, the guys weren't getting paid very well. Go ahead and ask Dutch Mantel, he'll tell you. But Jerry Jarrett knows how to run a profitable wrestling business, but it came down to him or Vince Russo, and as we see, Russo's still there, and Jarrett's gone. I will say that I believe that Vince Russo does have a place in the creative side of professional wrestling and with a professional wrestling company, but unless Vince Russo has someone to answer to, unless he has someone to run his ideas past, and a filter, pretty much, I mean, pretty much the role that Vince McMahon played, then Russo's not going to be successful. He's his own worst enemy. You know, the guy is in a lot of ways greatly responsible for turning the WWE around, you know, the mid-90s. But he just, without Vince McMahon to be that filter, like I said, he's just his own worst enemy. Matt Conway, a wrestling fan, that's great. I wish that they would have more wrestling fans on the booking staff. But, you know, Eric Bischoff definitely plays a part to an extent in creative now. I know that he sits in on the meetings. But it just, you know, yeah, like you say, unless you're going to have, you know, equal members, you know, nothing against Matt. But if you have equal members, if you have a Vince Russo, if you have a Terry Taylor, if you have a Dutch Mantel, a Jim Cornette, you know, let's bring in guys from different eras that who are experienced and know what they're doing, and put them all together and really have someone that they have to answer to and run these ideas by, then I think maybe it could work. But then on the other hand, you know, Dusty Rhodes was completely innovative and did a lot to book Jim Crockett Promotions in the 80s, but anytime he's had an opportunity to be creative since, it's fallen flat. I guess you could say the same thing about Vince Russo. I don't know how Paul Heyman would do if he was in an opportunity to, you know, run creative for a company. I know that's what everyone was clamoring to see, and, you know, Paul Heyman take over the creative side of TNA. I don't know. I think that the answer is either to, you know, for Dixie Carter, or if it's going to be Janice Carter, if it's going to be her mom, then let it be her. But someone's got to take charge of the company, and someone has to filter the ideas of whoever the creative department is, or they need to go in an opposite direction and start from scratch and bring in guys that, you know, I don't know. It's hard. It's like, where do you find people to book professional wrestling? You know, the WWF has looked outside of the wrestling business and brought in writers from Friends and shows like that, and look at what we've got. It's a horrible wrestling product. You know, I've heard rumblings within TNA about guys like Kevin Sullivan bringing him, but Kevin Sullivan, you know, helped put WCW in the ground. So I don't know. It's a tough position for them to be in, but I know that they can't keep losing money, so they got to do something. If it were up to me, I'd bring in Dave Meltzer. Let's let Dave Meltzer, you know, guys like Dave Meltzer and yourself, Steve Gerwick, you guys have these wrestling journalists, they've got an inside eye. You know, some of my favorite things are to watch some DVDs. There's a DVD set that's out that has commentary from Dave Meltzer and Jim Cornette, and it is the most entertaining wrestling that you can see. So I don't know where we go.
Yeah, it's real interesting to see that they have, you know, guys or women that have failed. You know, to a larger degree, Vince Russo has failed as a booker. In recent years, you have Eric Bischoff. You know what happened with WCW? They're not even in existence anymore. We're really sold for, you know, a couple millions of dollars. Dixie Carter, you know, doesn't have the experience or the knowledge to be an executive in TNA and to run a wrestling organization. That's the reason you are where you are today. And again, as you said, you know, you had Jim Cornette there for a while. You know, why wouldn't Jim Cornette be given an opportunity to book? I mean, he's booked OVW. He booked Smoky Mountain Wrestling, a guy who has been successful. Jerry Jarrett, as you alluded to. Of course, we know, I guess some people don't know, Jerry Jarrett and Jeff Jarrett, they really don't get along all that well, and that's one of the reasons that Jerry's not there anymore. Dutch Mantel, as you alluded to as well, who we just had on the on an interview, again, a successful booker, was very successful in Puerto Rico, drew money. I believe it was the 2002 Wrestling Observer, as you were alluding to Dave Meltzer there, Booker of the Year. So guys that have been successful that could do the job, as you said, Paul Heyman, they don't get the opportunities that they could come in and possibly take us in a new direction. I know Paul Heyman would say, you know, you got to totally start over. It's probably a 5-year plan. And if TNA is willing to give you the 5 years or Spike TV is willing to give you the 5 years, that's the direction you have to go. A lot of things go back, Adam, to the talent level. And as we talk about the talent level, there's a draft coming up in WWE where they're just going to kind of mesh guys from one show to the other. I guess they have to somehow replace Edge with somebody on Raw, but again, then you water down Raw. And when you look at it, to me, I mean, TNA has a great roster, and yet to this day they're in the boat they are. They draw 1.2, and as we were talking offline, Impact. Tough Enough does a 1.5, and you know, Tough Enough has really inexperienced guys that are on the show. But you know, in terms of the talent level is starting to maybe show or put kind of a dim view or a bad view perspective for wrestling fans. We've seen kind of in recent days, you've seen Kurt Angle have trouble with Twitter. He originally said that, WWE was stealing some of his moves, and then he later said, no, I didn't say that. My Twitter account was hacked, and then he said it was a family member did that to his Twitter. We've had all the saga with the Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy just did a YouTube where he said that Jeff may need back surgery, you know, career-ending surgery, and then I guess his wife, Jeff's wife's, put something on Twitter that said, no, I don't. He's never said that before. And then she took the comment down. We got Sting as the world champion, a guy who was very limited at age 52. So while you have a lot of good things with the talent, now we're starting to see some of the reasons why some people have kind of a negative connotation. I think when you look at, you know, comments on Gerwick.net, Kurt Angle and Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy, those are like magnets to comments, and you're seeing a lot of negative conversation about what's some of the things they're saying. And I think if they're going to, you know, proceed in a positive light, they really have to get some of the talent under control. And, you know, then maybe, okay, Adam, if you're coming in and you're in charge here, you know, maybe we cut ties with Kurt Angle, who just said, hey, I'm going to resign. you know, maybe he's resigning because WWE doesn't really want him. You got Matt and Jeff Hardy are there. You know, are they assets or liabilities? A lot of people have, you know, posed that question. Sting, you know, they pay him a lot of money. You know, is he worth the money that they've invested in him? So while you have a lot of young talent there in X Division, you talked about a lot of the talent on the pay-per-view, there are starting to become some stars that maybe in the final analysis, maybe somebody you have to take a closer look at and maybe change direction with those talents.
Well, you know, and the sad thing about it is, too, is that a lot of these younger guys, a lot of the guys that are further down the roster, I don't know how much longer they can hold out in TNA as well because, you know, there's been different reports surfacing on the Internet that you know, talk about how these guys are making $400 a night. You know, Austin Kong left TNA because she was making $400 a night. And you've got, on the opposite end of the spectrum, you've got Kurt Angle and Rob Van Dam who are making $4,000 a night per appearance. So, you know, is the money that they're spending on these guys worth it? I'm not so sure. And I think that they do need to rope these guys in a little bit and say, you know, we've kind of lost direction a little bit. When Kurt Angle came in, he was certainly an asset to the company, and it was a big move. And it didn't equal, you know, great ratings right at the beginning. The ratings have continued to steadily climb to an extent, you know, when he first came in, but they've leveled off now. But yeah, you know, you've got to rope these guys in, and they all three, Kurt Angle, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, all have issues with substance abuse. You know, Kurt Angle just in the news recently arrested. Christopher Daniels is a guy who's been arrested several times for DUI and public intoxication and alcohol-related offenses. So it's kind of like the inmates are running the asylum. They're running around lawless, and I think Sting is a good guy, but again, like you say, what can he really do for the price that he's paying at their being, you know, paid at this point in his career? When you look to the independent circuit and you see talent like a Phil Shatter or an Adam Pearce or Sheik, who wrestles out of Florida, it just, you know, there are a lot of young, hungry guys out there. And then you turn things over to TNA and you see the Millionaires Club, basically, of all these old guys, and you see the irrational, behavior of Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy. It just, you know, Matt Hardy, the WWE got rid of Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy for a reason. They got rid of Kurt Angle for a reason. I don't think that they wanted to lose Kurt Angle on a permanent basis, but they let him go for a reason, and that's because he had problems. Kurt Angle, ever since he's been with TNA, has been in and out of the news with, you know, we had the whole Rock and Con stuff going on. We've had, this is his second DUI. He got, the police chased him down, and when he came to the door, he had pills in his mouth. Yeah. So, we've had a lot of problems with Kurt Angle, and it's a shame because the guy, like I say, I mean, he went out there in one of the biggest spots of the night, did the moonsault from the cage. Was it necessary? You know, probably not, but you know, the guy can go out there and still get one of the bigger reactions from the crowd, but who's to say that, you know, if you build somebody from the ground up, who's to say that a Jay Lethal can't go out there and get that same kind of reaction? And you're never going to know until you start really pushing these guys seriously. So it's tough to say. It's hard to say. You know, TNA only has the one show, and, you know, they rely so heavily on these guys, and they're pushed so hard, and the ratings haven't increased. Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff came in and promised Dixie Carter the world, and the ratings have not increased. They haven't gone up at all. You know, Hulk Hogan has made such sporadic appearances, and I know that he's been unhealthy, but at the same time, he's been very inconsistent in his appearances with TNA. And it just, you know, it's a lot of money that's tied up for guys that are in the twilight of their careers. And when Sting came in, they brought him in as, you know, this is going to be Sting's last run. We all know it's Sting's last run. This is nostalgic because he's the icon. He is, you know, the legend, the icon Sting. And it's going to be his last go around. I mean, he's the old guy that still got it. We heard the chance, you still got it. And, you know, they used him right at the beginning, but now, he's supposedly in negotiations with Vince McMahon to come in and wrestle, and he doesn't want to because ultimately, at the end of the day, he doesn't want his character to be buried. He doesn't want it to be used in a bad way. So we see him re-sign with TNA, and immediately, he's in the main event scene, and he wins the world title on his first night back. So I don't know. I mean, the company is in a state of confusion, because you see, as Lockdown went off the air, and for a good 20 minutes after the show was over, Fortune stayed out and celebrated with the fans. They celebrated with the crowd, you know, and it was a really good heartfelt moment for those guys, because they have been with TNA for so long and they have sacrificed so much for the company. So on one hand, you've got them, and it was a nice moment. But then on the other hand, you know, we see, you know, the Impact Spoilers, I don't think they're in yet, but it's going to go right back to that Millionaires Club, and it's a lot of money that they're throwing at these guys. And for this state of their career, I don't know. I don't know what they have to offer. Rob Van Dam, you know, was supposedly going to be a big ratings draw and going to boost and help the company, and he hasn't really done a whole lot. Mr. Anderson, I think, is a very, very talented guy as far as the mic goes. He's not as great in the ring, but, you know, that's only 50% of things in today's professional wrestling. So what quality of talent has he had to work with? He's working with these old guys, and he's working with, you know, with Rob Van Dam. Not a lot's changed. We've seen a lot happen for TNA in the last 2 years, ever since the failed Monday Night Experiment. We've seen a lot of guys come in, and it hasn't really done much for the company. It hasn't really meant much. So I don't know. It's a hard sell. I think that maybe the answer is to just go black. Go black for a few weeks and start from scratch.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know WWE allows its talent to be on Twitter, but they do have some restrictions on what you can post on Twitter and what you can say. And maybe, you know, TNA needs to do that, because obviously Facebook and Twitter are becoming very common for wrestling fans to interact with the talent. And it's a great way to, you know, mingle with some of the wrestlers, but it can cause you some PR damage when guys say things that are out of bounds, or they post videos. That video that Jeff and Matt posted, where they were just going shooting promos on CM Punk, and just, I mean, that is not the image. I mean, you had Jeff Hardy as your champion while he's on trial for drugs, and it just, I mean, there's so many black eyes this company does to itself. And you know, sometimes, you know, if you're going to say start over, yeah, maybe really start over. I mean, I don't know, Adam, for social networking, you had Dixie Carter get her account suspended. So I don't know what that says. I mean, here's the leader of the company, and she tries to verify her own self on Twitter, and then she has her account suspended. And I've noticed really since then, she's gone kind of quiet on Twitter, so and taking it easy. So I think they have to look internally, look within. I think there's a lot of changes they can definitely do to create a more positive. I think the first thing they have to do is get rid of the negative connotation of TNA. When people just say TNA, it just invokes an emotion that they don't want, where it should invoke an emotion like, oh, yeah, wrestling. I can see some wrestling, especially at a time when WWE is going into a total entertainment phase that, you know, people are still looking for that wrestling product, and it's just not there with TNA. So, you know, that's kind of our thoughts on it overall, kind of giving you the state of the union for TNA. Is there's definitely talk of rebranding. You know, there's all kinds of issues out there in terms of talent, creative. But overall, Adam, I don't see a lot changing, and I think probably if we would do a show like this within a year or say 12 months from now, I have a feeling we'll probably be in a very similar boat.
Yeah, I think that's probably more than likely what will happen. I do want to say, I want to make it very clear that I want to see TNA succeed. I want to see them do well. I want to see them be, whether they're a viable competition to WWE, that's not really important for me at this point in time. I just want to see them be a viable company. I want to see them make it. I want to see them be around tomorrow and, you know, not run in the red. I want to see them do well for them. You know, let's take WWE completely out of the equation, because as of right now, you know, TNA doesn't even need to think about WWE. For all the times that they take shots at them, it's not necessary. That was the cool thing to do in the 90s, and maybe at one point in time, maybe in 10, 15 years, you'll get to that level, and we'll see another Monday Night War. But at this point in time, it's just not necessary. I followed TNA since the very beginning. I ordered their first pay-per-view all the way back in, Huntsville, Alabama. And I saw that first show. I saw Dick and Rod Johnson and the Flying Elvises, and I saw all the goofy mistakes that they made then. And I saw them really come alive and really start to do well with the X Division. And I watched all those old X Division main events. I saw the first Ultimate X match. Then I saw the first cage match and all those great tag team wars between America's Most Wanted and Triple X and Team Canada and the Disciples of the New Church. And I saw Raven and Jeff Jarrett and that feud build and just, you know, really have a good ending, a good blow off. And I've seen them, you know, I watched them debut on Spike TV. You know, they had been dark for, you know, a good 3 or 4 months before that. They had lost their horrible afternoon time slot on Fox Sports Net, and they didn't have TV at all. They ran a pay-per-view or two with no TV. And then they got on Spike TV, and it looked like everything was going to be great, and they slowly have made strides. And I was against initially Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff coming in, but then I started to think, you know what, maybe this can do something good for this company. Maybe it can give it a shot in the arm. Maybe it can give it a boost. And I got to admit, when Jeff Hardy debuted for the company, I was excited about it. And, you know, Rob Van Dam and Mr. Anderson and all these guys coming in, I was excited about it. When I heard Matt Hardy talk about how he was used and abused in the WWE and how he wanted to be free and wanted to go work for TNA and be with his brother so badly, I got excited about it. I thought maybe Matt Hardy can, you know, he will go to TNA and we'll see the old Hardy boys and things will be great and it'll be a shot in the arm. So throughout everything that they've tried, through every failed experiment, through every positive, through every moment I followed TNA, and I really hope that they become a viable company. I want to see them succeed. It's easy for us to be negative about things because of the state that they're in right now, and that's too bad. But, you know, that's kind of what we do. We're giving a commentary about the state of the business. As we said, this is a State of Union address, but I really hope that TNA can find a way to step things up and find a clear direction of what they want to be and where they want to go and start to fire, you know, and really take off. I hope that that happens. I don't think it's going to happen soon, and it's not going to be an easy process, and I think they're going to have to cut a lot of dead weight, and I think that that's going to be a tough task. I don't envy them. And you know, people in Dixie Carter and the higher ups, I don't envy their position in regards to, you know, doing that. But they've got to make some serious changes, and I hope that they do. And I really hope that they succeed. And I hope that we see it soon because, you know, professional wrestling, you've got WWE, and WWE has so much exposure. But WWE drew a 3.1 rating this week, and that was Vince Russo era dying WCW Nitro numbers. And I realized that television trends as a whole have changed since the late 90s, but I really hope that wrestling gets that shot in the arm that it needs. Everyone has said since the beginning of time that wrestling is cyclical and it goes through cycles of up periods and down periods, but I'm really hoping we catch that next wave and an up period, and I hope that TNA is around to be a part of it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think those that think maybe we're too critical or, you know, sometimes we're labeled as haters or other people are haters if they say something negative about the company. I think we just all just want to see them succeed. And it's so frustrating when they have such potential to be something successful that in the end we see a product that is not something that the majority of wrestling fans want to see. So, again, I agree with Adam that they really need to listen to the fans. Definitely, you know, it's amazing that they interact with the fans through – the TNA house shows, you know, listen to the fans. These are the people that ultimately, you know, these are the people that buy your merchandise, that go to your shows, that order the pay-per-views. So very interesting tonight, as we said, the State of the Union for TNA. And I thank Adam tonight, and I thank him for his perspective on lockdown, the live perspective. You don't often get a chance to talk about a pay-per-view from a live perspective, but Adam went, so we appreciate his time tonight and all the comments on TNA. I know that you know, people will want to leave their commentary as well, as we do with every podcast, that you can leave comments at the end of the post itself. So if you have any thoughts on what we said or have other thoughts on TNA, definitely leave it. And another thing, Adam, that we should mention as well, that the podcasts and the interviews we do here on GirlWick.net are now available on iTunes. So if you're out and about and you want to download one of the shows and listen to it on your iTunes or on your iPad, you can definitely do that now. So another great resource to have.
Absolutely. It's pretty cool. And I got to say, I check out all the downloads myself. My favorite times to listen to them, I'll go to the tanning bed or I'll be, you know, somewhere, wherever, and I just download it, the MP3, right to my phone, and I can listen to it anytime that I want to. It's pretty convenient. All the great interviews that you've got on here, and I know that you've got some big ones lined up, and we're bound to, you know, see some more. It's just a really great interactive way to get your views and opinions across, and you know, as the more comments that we receive, the more that, you know, we'll address. You know, this whole podcast thing is in its infancy as far as, you know, this here at GirlWick.net goes. We're working out all the kinks and whatnot, but you know, let's make this thing a little bit more interactive. We'll certainly, you know, touch on your comments, and we certainly like to hear them. And, you know, I definitely will post some comments on a lot of news articles throughout the day. So it's definitely a chance to get your opinion out there and interact with other fans who might agree with what you're saying and might not, but that's part of the fun of being a wrestling fan.
Yeah, definitely. We'd get some great comments at the end of those news posts. So definitely check those out. If you are not common to do that, you know, scroll down the end of the page. There's a box for you to enter your comments. And as I said, Adam does that all the time. You can see a comment from Adam Fairfax. You definitely can check out. And, of course, you can reply to it as well. Leave your thoughts as well. So, again, we thank you for listening tonight. State of the Union for TNA. You can leave your comments and thoughts, and we appreciate you listening. And if you're joining us on the iPod as well, we appreciate the download as well. Again, thank you for support of GirlWick.net.